America should be grateful to God for the blessings he's given us.
Don't let anyone tell you that America's best days are behind her.
We have got to fight for this nation because I believe with all my heart this nation is in fact one nation under God.
Oh, amen to that. It is one nation under God. And as hard as the left tries to make it a divisible nation, it is not. And we need to stay united as a nation, as a people, and continue to fight. And we got to fight in corners of this country that we never thought we'd have to fight for. And I talked about in the last hour, I was talking to Colonel Alan West. And yes, if you live in Maine and you live in Washington State or you live in wherever, we've got to fight, yes, for the state of Texas. We got to look at how the United States needs to stay united. And it's critically important that we fight for Texas so we don't lose Texas to the left. Because that is going to create problems in the state that you live in. And we've got to make sure that we can hold that. And I talked about that. We are one nation. We are under God. We know that. We know that. Just look at the last presidential election. Talk about confirmation. I sure appreciate all of you. Thank you for being with us. Let's go to news real quick. We'll take a little go to news, and then we'll be right back.
You're watching FISM News.
I'm Ian Patrick, and this is FISM News. In the technology sector, State Farm Insurance is working with Amazon to create an Alexa skill to help aging users stay connected and safe. State Farm has not yet decided if insurance will cover the cost of Alexa for seniors. The list of functions, which could include medication reminders and suggested activities in the area, will be tested in a series of trials throughout the next few months. The official launch date will be sometime next year. A recent Gallup poll shows that President Trump's approval ratings have remained consistently within the 40 to 44% range since May. The president continues to hit his highest marks on his economic management. Meanwhile, his lowest marks are given for handling issues of race. Continuing threats of a recession could impair the president's overall performance ratings. However, the overall health of the U.S. economy has improved across a number of measures since Trump's inauguration. On Tuesday, a federal judge temporarily blocked a Missouri law banning abortions after 8 weeks. The law was signed by Republican Governor Mike Parson back in May and was scheduled to take effect on Wednesday. One portion of the law that will still be upheld is the ban on abortions based solely on sex, race, or the diagnosis showing potential Down syndrome. In a statement, Governor Parson said he is encouraged that the ruling upholds, quote, the anti-discrimination provisions of the law. The 8-week ban is paused until the case can unfold in court, and a hearing on the matter is scheduled for October. 19 states and the District of Columbia sued President Trump's administration on Monday in order to prevent a new indefinite migrant detention rule from taking effect in October. In a statement announcing the lawsuit, California Attorney General Javier Becerra claims that the new rule, quote, undermines a decades-old agreement reached in court by the federal government to prevent the unlawful detention of immigrant children. And in addition to legal hurdles, the new Trump law will face logistics issues. In an interview with C-SPAN, Michelle Gay shares ideas for new programming that will keep schools safe from violence.
School emotional learning, if I can give you the sort of nutshell version, is really advocating for positive interactions, values, positive culture and climate, teaching our students and our staff members and families how to deal with and process emotions, complicated emotions that they might have in any given day. So really teaching more positive interactions and those types of things we believe will have a positive effect on issues that we're still seeing today, such as bullying.
Michelle Gay is the founder and executive director for the organization Safe and Sound Schools. I'm Ian Patrick, and this is FISM News.
Thank you for watching. This has been FISM News.
Thank you, Ian. Good stuff. I sure do appreciate that. I'll tell you, there's so many little things going on that we don't hear getting reported. We're glad we're able to do that for you. You know, folks, one of the things that is not getting enough conversation, by me primarily and anybody else, but I should be at least talking about it, is, you know, how this devaluation of the yuan and so many other currencies around the globe. If you want to go to England, it's a good day to do it, by the way. Your dollar will go a little further. But look, what does that affect? It affects commodities. What does commodities affect? Affects our food prices. You know, the government doesn't want to talk about it because they don't care. Remember, they don't care about core inflation. I mean, they only care about core inflation, which is stripping out food and energy, the two very things that we use the most of. Now, one thing that is helping right now with our food inflation and our commodity prices, including our oil prices, is trucking prices are probably stabilized a little bit as diesel prices are coming down. That's a good thing. So we're not seeing that problem continue to grow worse. But nonetheless, you know, we've got to think about our commodities. So if our dollar doesn't stay strong, and there are some that are promoting devaluing our dollar, but if it doesn't stay strong, what does that mean? It means it's going to take more dollars to buy a bushel of wheat. That's basically what it means. And so it creates inflation, and it's going to create food inflation. And we don't want that to happen. So all that to say how grateful we are for Craig Haggart that comes in here. Craig gives us great outlook on what the commodities are doing. Some of it you and I, the average person, doesn't understand. But if you're a grower, if you're a rancher, you know, if you're out there working hard on your farm and ranch, it means a lot to you. And that's why we do. And we love Craig and his perspective. I mean, here he is right now. Then we're going to get right back to phones as soon as we get finished with the Ag Report.
This is Craig Haugard with your Financial Issues Ag Update. Corn traded lower on Friday as it was pressured by month-end positioning and deliveries. The outlook for warmer and drier weather conditions should help the corn crop develop, and that also put some pressure on prices Friday. As I record this, the overnight spot corn futures are trading a penny lower. The soybean market drew support from a round of short covering ahead of the long weekend and worries that the late planted crop could get hurt by a September or October frost. That was enough to allow beans to close up a half a cent or so for the day. Certainly not a huge victory, but better than a losing session. In the overnight trade, however, we're losing all of that and then some, with spot soybean futures trading a nickel lower as I record this. The wheat market appears to have a problem. Minneapolis wheat, Kansas City, and Paris milling wheats are all at life of contract lows, with Chicago futures hanging out 8 to 12 cents above their contract lows. Spring wheat harvest has resumed and should be good to go for the next few days. The winter wheat areas have received beneficial moisture for planting the next crop of winter wheat, tossing in ample supplies, and it's pretty hard to find something bullish to attach to this market. In the overnight trade, Chicago and Minneapolis are trading unchanged, while Kansas City is 2 cents higher. Cotton futures continue to trade in a very narrow, tight trading range. On Friday, we saw the December futures close down 17 points as they settled at 58.83. Cattle futures have been under pressure ever since the fire at the Tyson packing plant raised concerns that there would be an oversupply of fat cattle. The weekly slaughter has remained in line with pre-fire levels, but the market really doesn't seem to care. The packer has continued to have massive margins, with Friday's margins reported at over $382 per head. October live cattle futures ended the day lower on Friday as they were down 87.5 cents, while the October feeder cattle futures were down $1.17.5 cents for the day. Lean hog futures were higher for the week, although they closed lower on Friday, with October futures down $1.37.5 cents. Class 3 milk futures had another solid performance, with September futures up 6 points to close at 17.62. In the overnight trade, spot milk futures are trading an additional 7 points higher. The cash livestock markets had a mixed session to end the week. The day ended with choice beef boxes 42 cents lower to settle at $231.77, while selects were 51 cents lower for the day as they closed at $212.27. Pork carcass values, on the other hand, gained a little ground as they finished the day 75 cents higher to settle at $72.31 per hundredweight. This has been Craig Haugard with your Financial Issues Ag Update. We'll be right back with more financial issues after this.
Welcome back, Financial Issues. I'm Dan Sierra. It's great to be here. 610-363-1110. 610-363-1110. If you want to queue your call up, you can do it. 610-363-1110. How easy is that? 610-363-1110. 610-363-1110. You can queue your call up. Let me go to phones. Let me go to Oregon. Hi, Lynn.
Good morning, Dan. How are you today?
I'm good. Thank you.
Good. I have two questions for you. One involves taking Social Security later, say at 70, when it does reach its maximum. If I retire at 66, so I'm no longer contributing, can I still expect that payment that is on my statement at 70 to be true without working those 4 years?
Yeah, it's probably going to be more true then than it is now. So because you're not going to be adding to your average for those 4 years. You know what I mean? So if you're still working, that number is you know, always changing for the better, I hope, usually, but that's always changing. So yes, you should be able to still trust that.
Okay, good. The other question, the gentleman that just called about the material stock that was added,
yes.
And you mentioned that had an international tax, perhaps.
Yes.
Is that applicable? All of my investment is in a Roth account. Would I still expect to get that international tax? Because normally I don't pay tax.
Right. You know what? I don't know if I'm going to try to look right now to see if it's qualified or not. If it's not qualified, then you would still have to file. It's not saying on here. I just still happen to have it up on my screen, but no, it's not. It's not saying, and I don't remember. I'm terrible. I don't pay any attention to those things because I don't care enough, me personally. So I tend not to pay attention to it, not thinking that everybody probably cares about that except for me, because I just, you know, always just think, you know, who cares if I only make 5% other than, you know, compared to 6. But, it doesn't, it doesn't say what it is. I'd have to look into that and let you know. So I'm not certain whether it is or not. But I wouldn't give it up even if it isn't. I would probably still do it, but I am not certain.
Okay. Can I ask you one other question?
Sure.
Involving retirement. When I retire, I have a state retirement. The majority of that would be paid out, but because the state has tried to mitigate some of our financial loss with so much being paid out, they call it tiers, and one of my block amounts, it would have to be taken as a chunk of money and rolled over into my own IRA. Is it better to do that, or that proverbial question, I guess, of paying off my house? My payments are kind of burdensome if I retire and, you know, I would have a smaller income then. Should I use that amount, perhaps take it over a period of time so my taxes aren't hopefully quite so high on it, and try to pay that house down?
Can you take it over time? Are they going to let you do that? Do you know?
Well, I have to roll it over into another account.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Gotcha.
But take it out of that account, say over a period of 4 or 5 years, while I'm thinking my income would be less because I'm not going to take Social Security until I'm 70. So during that 4 or 5 years, lower income, take it out in maybe 20% a year of it.
And is the income you receive or will be receiving, is that going to be part of a pension?
It's separate.
It's separate from that.
It's separate from my monthly payments that will go on as long as I live.
Okay. And with those monthly payments and Social Security, will you still have some like emergency funds?
Yeah, I still have a savings account outside of that.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I would probably be okay with that. I'd probably be okay with that. I think it's fine. What I get concerned about is using some money that you might need at some point in time to help supplement your income. But if you look down the road and you say, you know, when I'm 70 and a half and I get my Social Security and I have my pension already coming in, I'll be fine, you know, then I wouldn't worry about it. But I just get concerned about doing that. And this is going to be like receiving more income. You're using this money to receive income, basically, because you're freeing up that discretionary income of the mortgage. You're gonna free up more discretionary income. So it is going to help you gain, you know, or hold on to more of your income. And that would be a good thing. So I would be okay with it.
Okay. All right. Good. Thank you so much.
You're
I appreciate
welcome.
It.
Thank you, Lynn. I'm glad you called. God bless.
You too.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Let me go to Dawn. Dawn's calling us from Oklahoma. Hi, Dawn.
Hello. I just had a couple questions.
Okay.
My husband and I just had a little girl. She's a 10-month old now, actually. But we were trying to save for her college, and we were thinking about, like, the Oklahoma, I think it's like 529 savings. And then I went to the Timothy plan, and it showed something about, briefly looked at it, about college savings there. Do you know which one is better?
No, I like some of the state plans. If you're going to do that, some of the state plans, and I believe Oklahoma has a plan. I mean, the best state plans are the ones that offer, basically, they're helping you to lock in some tuition at a lower price, but you have to, unfortunately, go to a state school. So she would have to go to a state school someday in Oklahoma. And that is where the rub is with a lot of people. They say, well, you know, how do you guarantee that? Well, you can't, you know. I mean, I guaranteed it with at least my oldest daughter when I said, look, here's the thing. I'm paying for whatever state school costs. I don't care where you go, but that's what money you're getting. The rest you're going to have to get into debt. She decided not to do that. But it is, that's the best plan. Second best, I'm okay with Oklahoma's 529 plan, which is what you're talking about, is your state savings. But keep in mind, you lose some of the tax benefit if for some reason, let's say she decided she was going to go into the workforce right out of high school for one reason or another and wants to go into some sort of other kind of career that she could do that with, then you would lose the tax advantages. So all that money would become taxable as you use it. And that's the only downside to that plan. But the Timothy plan is the same thing in that regard. So, but you have a little bit more flexibility maybe with the Timothy plan. But I'm okay with the state 529.
Okay. And then I had just one more question. We have some cash set aside, like when she was born, people gave us gifts,
sure.
Whatnot. What is the best way to start a savings, some kind of savings for her where it actually grows, like not just a bank account?
Yeah, so I would probably open up a account, a brokerage account somewhere, E-Trade or somewhere, or TD Ameritrade or whatever. And I would buy on a regular basis, you know, as she gets money, I would take the ETF, the Timothy ETF, TPLC, and I would buy some shares of that. And I would just continue to buy it whenever you got a chance. I wouldn't do anything else and just leave
okay.
it alone. And I think that would be
okay.
a good thing.
All right. Thank you. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thank you, Dawn. Our phone lines are open, 610-363-1110. Let me go to Fran from New Mexico. Hi, Fran.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. Thank you for all you do. My question is this. I'm 78. I dropped my ARP, supplemental insurance, about a year and a half ago or so, and then I heard you saying some negativity on the radio. So, anyway, but I'm looking for supplemental insurance to my Medicare, because if I don't have it, well, the hospital charges a lot of money besides the Medicare. And I'm wondering, do you have a particular insurance company or that you recommend for supplemental insurance?
No, Fran, I don't, unfortunately. And a lot of, I tell people that if you already have, you know, something like a Samaritan Ministries, you can use that for supplemental. If you already have that when you go on Medicare. But I would probably say you're going to have to go back to, there are insurance companies. See, every state has their own companies. There are insurance companies. So I would be surprised if United Healthcare or Aetna or one of them didn't, they probably have a supplemental care, but, and you'd have to go to one in your state that is licensed and able to do business in your state, in your county. And that's what you want to do to supplement. I suspect, do you have is your Medicare through AARP as well?
No.
Okay, good.
No.
That's good. So you have original Medicare. That's great. And you're going to have to look around in your state. If you can get the phone number for the state insurance commission in New Mexico and talk to the first person that answers the phone and ask them that question, they would probably give you an answer for the companies in your county.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome, Fran. I'm glad you called. Thank you so much.
God bless
you. Thank you.
Bye.
Folks, we have lines open. 610-363-1110. 610-363-1110. 610-363-1110. Financial issues. We'll be right back right after this. Welcome back. Financial Issues. I'm Dan Celia. We'll get back to phone 610-363-1110. I also want to mention David asked about one of the stocks that is on MA46 that is on my buy list this morning, whether it's taxable. The international income is a taxable pre-tax or after-tax. It's taxed on it's going to come right. Go right on the top of your tax. It's income. It's taxed you as, you know, the income portion of it is going to be taxed. So it's, you know, it's taxed on top of your normal tax. So if you look at your tax return, you see where you would put that, and it's going to do calculations against losses and calculations against some other things, and it's going to come up with a number that you're going to have to pay. But it's not really, it's investment income. It's, you know, certainly going to be taxed to you as it's going to hit your gross adjusted income. So anyway, all right, let me go to phones, go to Ken. Ken's calling us from Texas. Hey, Ken.
Hey, Dan. Wanted to thank you for all that you do.
You're welcome.
Been listening to you about 3 years. And about 2 years ago, I had a medical emergency that I had to pay out of pocket and cost me quite a bit. And right after that, I said, man, I said, I'm going to check out the Samaritan's Ministry. So we signed up for that probably a year and a half ago. And then last year at this time, I had open heart surgery.
Oh, wow.
So that was covered under Samaritan's Ministries. So what a blessing that was to be listening to you and paying attention and finally getting off the fence and doing what I should have already done a long time ago.
You know what? That's a good testimony for people to hear, Ken, because it reminds people that, you know, that is the beauty. You know, you never get hit with unexpected costs. I mean, you might, but you're going to get them paid for. And, you know, so many right now, you know, the number one issue that seniors are having right now is uncovered cost. And that's their number one reason they're going into debt, because they go in the hospital, they get something done, they're covered by Medicare plus whatever else they have. But then there are networks that are associated with some of that. And there are doctors, maybe an anesthesiologist or something in the hospital that's not covered in that network. They end up getting a bill for thousands of dollars when they get out that wasn't covered. And no problem with Samaritan. You never have that problem again. And that is the beauty.
I have to tell you that anybody that's out there that's on the fence, get off the fence and become a member of Samaritan's Ministry, because it'll bless you so many times over. So
it will. It is amazing. It is just amazing. But
I know you're always talking about it.
Yep. Well, thank you. That's great. That's a great testimony. I appreciate it.
Quick question. I've got some rental properties. I became a partner two or three months ago just because I wanted to listen to your conference calls. I'm not investing in the market. Got rental properties. I'm trying to pay them off. I paid one off last year, and I'm trying to pay the other one off this year so that it's all cash flow to me.
Mm.
And
that's great.
Then because I'm 63, I'm kind of thinking, well, I should maybe buy more rental houses, but I'm getting too old to maintain them and all that. So I guess I'm kind of doing the right thing by paying off rentals first and then starting to invest later on.
Yeah, you really are. I mean, I think it's a great source of income. I tell people all the time, you know, if you've got the ability or desire and are okay with being a landlord, man, you won't get a more consistent, better return, assuming that the, economy stays relatively strong and you're in an area where, you know you're going to be able to rent it. It's a great source of income. It's a great source of income. So, yeah, I think you did the right thing. And now that you're saying, okay, two's enough, and you're going to have good cash flow off of that, I think, you know, you're absolutely right. Now, you know, down the road, you can start thinking about investing, but you did the right thing.
Anyway, well, I did become a partner just to listen to your conference calls, and I appreciate all that you do. So God bless you. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ken. I appreciate it. God bless you. Thanks. Good stuff. You know, so many people that become partners just to support the ministry or to listen to the conference calls or whatever, that aren't using all the other stuff, but that's okay. You know, I mean, that's a wonderful thing, and we are so grateful for that, and sure do appreciate it. So let me go to Joe in Arkansas. Hey, Joe.
Hello, Dan. I want to thank you very much for your interview with Colonel Ellen West this morning. I found it extremely interesting, and I'm very glad that you had him on. And one thing I noticed that he said was that the big cities, the population centers of Texas, are leading the way in making the state more blue, more Democrat, more liberal, more socialistic. And that seems to be always the case all around the country. Oh, yeah. I've heard conservatives say this over and over and over, that it's always the big cities that are more liberal, more socialistic, more Democrat, and it's always the more rural areas, the countryside, the farmers and everything like that, that are more conservative.
Yeah.
And so I think conservatives ought to give some serious thought, because conservatives always seem to think that when the cities are growing, we're making progress, and that's good.
Right.
But at the same time, the growing of cities, you know, undermines conservatism and makes the country more socialistic. So I think conservatives ought to give serious consideration as to how can we make the country more rural, how can we preserve more of the countryness, the ruralness of the country. I remember reading Thomas Jefferson said one time, something like, he said he predicted freedom and happiness to the American people if they can stay rural and spread out, but if the population gets too concentrated in the big cities, then the country would become as oppressive as Europe.
Yeah.
And so I think this is a matter that conservatives ought to really give much more serious consideration to, as to how can we make the country more rural again? How can we keep it from getting over-urbanized?
Well, there's a great...
Because it seemed like over-urbanization and tyranny and socialism and oppression always go together.
Yeah, that's a great, great point. Yeah, I appreciate you making that point. We live in a state like that. I live in a state like that. So we live in a very conservative state for the majority of the... There's only 8 counties that control everything. And they're the counties around Philadelphia and the counties around Pittsburgh. So the whole... You know, when President Obama talked about people clinging to their Bibles and guns. He was in Pennsylvania when he was talking about it. He was talking about Pennsylvanians because we're so conservative, you know, in the middle of the country, middle of the state, which is the majority of all the counties in the state, very, very conservative. Yet, unfortunately, the two big cities control, you know, our elected officials, and that's disheartening sometimes. So maybe you're right. Maybe we ought to be thinking about becoming more rural. And that's a great point, but you're absolutely right. Thank you, Joe. I appreciate
it. Okay, thank you, Dan.
Thank you. God bless. Yeah, good stuff. Let me go to Mary in Pennsylvania. Hey, Mary.
Hey. Hello, Dan. This is Mary Solstice, and I was wondering what your take is on the Iraqi dinar. I called you before. My husband is still thinking that they'll come through, and it's really hurting the children because he doesn't make decisions. I mean, he makes decisions based upon something we don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, it's, Mary, unfortunately, it's never going to come through. It's just not going to happen. You know, we've got to think, even if we don't do anything, but think logically through it. Let me just give you a logical argument that you can say came from me. But the Iraqi dinar is not listed on any exchange. It's pretty much worthless. They got crazy with the printing press. It is devalued dramatically. It's not listed on any exchanges. And the scam is... And by the way, this has been going on for 60 years with the Vietnam dollar, and they're still saying any day now. Seriously, I mean, they're still selling. You can buy Vietnamese dollars because they say, you know, it's not going to be. Now, they're not as bad as they were some years ago, but it never happened. And the theory is, just so you know, that this is the only way they can regain any strength in their sovereign wealth or in their currency, and to be treated as on a level playing ground and like another developed country, is they have to get their government reorganized. When they do that, they're going to need to reprint new currency. And what they will do then is give the new currency to you or anybody that has an Iraqi dinar, and they will give you a new Iraqi dinar to replace the old one. The difference is the old one's worth 3 cents. The new one's going to be worth a dollar, and you will make millions of dollars. That can't happen. It can't happen. Because if they did that, then they would be right back in the same boat again. That nothing would change. They would have the same valuation. There wouldn't be any sense. What they'll do is they will give you one of the new dollars for maybe 120 of the old ones, but they're not going to make a one-for-one exchange. It would be, from a monetary standpoint, it would be impossible for them to do that and gain any sovereign wealth or gain any value in their currency. It can't, it is not going to happen. And I would beg your husband not to spend a nickel more on doing it.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
All right, Mary, I'm glad you called. God bless you, thank you.
God bless.
Yep. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Folks, we'll be right back after this.
Opinions and recommendations expressed by Dan are his own and do not necessarily represent the opinions of this station or any of the show's sponsors.
Welcome back. Financial Issues, 610-363-1110. 610-363-1110. If you want to queue your call, you're welcome to do it. We got another hour and 10 minutes. Let me go to Brian from Ohio. Hey, Brian.
Hey, Dan. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thank you.
I'm retired, and I now have an income portfolio. And if there was a significant downturn, let's say, in the economy, and I had to sell out of some of my positions, I'm curious to know, because I have a large position in preferred stocks, if those companies would, holding the preferred stocks, would they, because of the downturn, would they immediately call the preferreds?
No.
And therefore increase
my cash? No, no. It would be very unlikely that they would call at that point. So if you are in that position, if you think that's a possibility, you need to get out of some of that. Because it is going to devalue, make no mistake about it. Your income's not going to change, but the $25 a share is going to go down significantly. That's what happened in 2008. It's going to happen again if that happens. And that's why I try to tell people all the time, if you're not in it for the income, if you think this is there because it's safe or because you have a savings or whatever and you're trying to, you know, but you might need it, man, you should not own any of that.
Okay, so if, let's say, there was a downturn in the economy and I was thinking that I should sell out of some of my positions, you're saying that the last thing I should sell out of is the preferreds, right?
Well, no, yes, but you never get out. You'll never get out. I won't say never, but you're going to take a significant loss and because... If you pay $25 for it, you may end up selling it for $13. And you got to be prepared to do that or prepared to keep it and continue to collect your income. Your income's not going to change, but the value of the preferred is going to change. And the only reason you'll be able to sell it at all is because people are going to want to buy the income, because for people buying it, it's going to be a very good thing to buy it at 13, knowing that someday if it ever gets called, when it gets called, they'll get 25. And in the meantime, they're going to get some great income. So you won't have any trouble selling it, but you're not going to get the kind of return, you know, the cash back out of it. It's not going to happen.
Right. So that's true that I should not, if I had wanted to, for some reason, let's say a bad downturn in the economy, and I wanted to increase my cash, then I would sell out of anything other than preferreds.
Or any of those income things. Yeah, you would want to sell that off first. But remember, you're talking about a scenario, no matter what you're selling, you're talking about a scenario of doing it too late. So I only say that to you because it's not a very good scenario to even think about, because if it is a possibility that then you need to sell now so you don't lose money. I mean, anything, it doesn't matter what it is. So if we have that kind of severe downturn, anything that you want to sell is going to be down considerably and you're going to be, you know, taking a considerable loss. And so you need to have a cash position that whatever it is you think you need to weather the storm, so you don't have to sell anything. So that's the key. I mean, you're talking about doing what is the most common mistake known to, you know, the average Joe investor. that they make all the time. And it is a, you know, is a big mistake, because once you make that sale, you just took that loss and made it permanent. You can't, you know, it's one thing to have a stock go down and come back up again in 5 years. It's another one to solidify the loss, and you're never going to get that money back. And that's not a very good place to be in. So I would say to everybody out there listening, if you think, well, you know, if I ever need it during a downturn, I'll sell it. If you think that's a possibility that you could need that, I would tell you to sell it now and create a bigger cash position.
But I believe you said once upon a time that there may be a time when you would suggest people to sell part of their portfolio.
Yeah, before the downturn. I wouldn't say it afterwards. I wouldn't say
That's
it before
why I'm
the crisis.
On you.
Yeah, yeah. So I, like I said, and I'm not going to get it right every time, but it's like I put something on my sell list today. Only because I know a lot of people own it, and I know it's up considerably, and it's like, you know, why take the chance? I mean, it's time to get out of it. But I'm not gonna make that call the day before it all turns down. I may make it the year before, I hope, when it's still up, when I see it coming. In 2008, I made it in October of 2007. So by August of 2008, everybody was mad at me because you should have never sold, you know. Well, then they loved me in October. But it is a very, very difficult thing to do. I don't consider myself a market timer because I'm not, and I don't want to try to ever be because it's almost impossible. But sometimes I make the call, sometimes I don't. And you've got to kind of listen to those calls all along leading up to it. And it goes back to my strategy that is now we're not in right now, but of, you know, selling profits. If you've done that all along, when the markets come down, I don't know how many times people call me and said, you know what? I'm in great shape. I sold out so much profit. I don't even care that it's down. And so, you know, it's a continuous strategy. You know, we're not going to buy and sell the day before it goes down. You know, it just never works that way. I would never want to count on that. So, you know, I tell people, if you are in a situation that you are going to need during the bad times, you've got to have a cash position now. That is going to support you for that 3 or 4 years. I tell people building an income portfolio out of their IRA, say, and when they're 70 and a half, they've got to have income for 2 or 3 years. They've got to have cash in there of their minimum required distribution so they can give their portfolio a chance to, you know, make some gains in income that it's producing without starting to drain it right away. All those little things add up to a good kind of safety. And the worst thing that could happen is that you're overweighted in something. So if you're overweighted in preferreds or energy or anything for that matter, you know, when I say that being overweighted is a bad thing, it's for the bad times. I'm not saying it for the good times, because in the good times, you're happy that you're overweighted, but because maybe that's the sector that's going up. But there's never been a more important time that we are very, very well diversified. There will always be the time when you're a well-diversified portfolio. I have this like 3-4 times a year where I look at my IRA and say, oh man, I wish I had more money in utilities or this more money. I mean, that always happens, but you can't let it impact your strategy or you get in trouble. So if you have a well-diversified portfolio and you have a, as I talked about on the conference call, some strategies moving forward for protection against that downturn, that's what you need to be considering.
Thanks, Dan. I'm listening.
All right. Thank you, Brian. God bless.
Okay. Bye.
Yep. 610-363-1110. If you want to queue your call before we go to the break, you can do that. We're coming up on a break. Then we're going to have another hour of the program. I want to remind all of you as we move forward, folks, we're in our last month of the year right now, and we're trying to finish strong. But more importantly for this year, because it really is more importantly, we are thinking of ongoing expenses. I mean, that's what we always do. I'm a business person. I am a for-profit minded person living in a nonprofit world. And we don't want to live from year-end giving to year-end giving. So we're always thinking of our current expenses. They're the things that are going to help us grow and keep us growing. And we are doing a very simple kind of thing. We're asking people to help with our expenses on a continuous basis. And what we're asking is people to believe in the work that God has given us to do so much, and the kingdom work that is happening through so many people and through this ministry, that they'd be willing to commit to $20 a month. It's not a lot of money, but $20 a month to give. Obviously, if it's a lot of money for some people, I would hope you wouldn't do that and pray for us. That's what you can give us. But if you can do $20 a month and we can raise up an army of people that are doing that over the next 12 months, well, that would be awesome. So that's what we're asking. We hope that you will pray about that. Folks, if you have to leave us, we hope you have a wonderful day. You can go to our website, financialissues.org, our phone app, at Financial Issues phone app. You can listen to the next hour. We hope you'll do it. But if you got to leave us, have a great day. We'll see you tomorrow. We'll be back. More Financial Issues right after this.
We will never compromise our principles and standards. We will never give away our freedom. We will never abandon our belief in God.
Thank you for joining us. This has been an FISM production.